Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
What's going on, everyone? Jurassic Views, Ottawa's Raptors podcast. It's Monday. It's a long weekend here in Ottawa. Not because the feds are giving away holidays, but this is the province. You want to know what one of my pet peeves are? When the news talks about the province doing something or the federal government doing something and they say the city, like Ottawa has put this carbon tax on you, or Toronto now changing policies. No, don't talk about the city. The citizens of that place did not put policies or rules or taxes on anybody. That's the government. Just because they reside here, they work here, they work in that city, doesn't mean that the city's doing it. You know how many people have negative viewpoints about Ottawa because they're like, well, that's where the politicians are. That's where, you know, government decisions are made. I have nothing to do with that. In fact, the majority of Ottawans do not work in government. It might be half of Ottawa's families have a member who works for the federal government, possibly. But remember that federal workers work all across the country. There are offices, there is representation all over the country. So it's not just people who live here. It's not like we're like, you know, thinking in some sort of mastermind way as a city of how we can screw over the rest of the country. That bothers me. So did Ottawa give Family Day? No. Did Ottawa, you know, mess up as a city, things that happen with borders or taxes or, you know, financial givings or corruption. Did we have anything to do with that as a city? No. So let's stop with that. Can we, media? If any media members are listening to this podcast, let's just start there. Stop mentioning us as a city as if we're making the decisions. Thank you. Just end rant right there. I just need to get that off my chest as I was just reflecting on that. Anyways, this is post All-Star weekend. And I say that rather than just the game, because the weekend is filled with festivities, right? You've got legends like Larry Bird, an Indiana native, Oscar Robertson, an Indiana native, who have showed up to this weekend. You've got the vets. You've got guys on the sidelines, right? Giannis with his camera out. Shaq with like a double camera selfie stick. That was intense. He's out there. He's getting dunked on. You got veterans who are judges, you know, old hoop heads, who are former All-Stars like Dominique Wilkins. They're judging the dunk contest. There's guys like Kenny Smith who are announcing games, although a lot of fans didn't like Kenny this weekend for whatever reason. You've got Jennifer Hudson out there performing. You've got national anthems being done by a legend himself, Babyface, who was great doing the national anthem on guitar. Also, just as a side note, I didn't mention this in the last pod, shout out to Post Malone for recovering after his halftime at the NBA All-Star weekend last year in Utah, man, he was trashed on stage. He was high. He was drunk. This guy, I believe, does God Bless America for the Super Bowl, goes all country, and was great. He was really, really good. So shout out to him. But Babyface, woo-wee, the legend himself, my guy at 64 years old, has got styles. There's my goal, to be Babyface in terms of his style, his aura. Like at 64 years old, that's pretty much in 18 years from now. If I can be like Babyface, oof, man, I'll be very happy if I've got his kind of swag, energy, even like a tenth of it. Man, he is such a legend and has influenced so much music, has produced so many great artists. Anyways, again, just so much to talk about on this episode. But the weekend of the All-Star Game is just so huge. Celebrities, former players, Hall of Famers, you know, people from that city, legends, musicians from that state showing up. You've got celebrity games, you've got contests. So it's not just the game itself. And I realized when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, the game was the focal point. Yeah, you had the dunk contest. Yeah, you had the three-point contest. And those are cool. But the real focus was the game. And the game oftentimes was at like 3, 4, maybe 6 p.m. You'd watch it during dinner. Maybe you'd been playing hoops earlier that day and you come home and you're able to watch the game before dinner starts. And the, you know, players were part of the contest. Like so many of the All-Stars were part of the contests themselves. And then you had, you know, guys who really wanted to win the All-Star game. And, you know, last time we had a competitive All-Star game was 2020, just before the pandemic. They put the Elam ending in. Kyle Lowry taking charges. LeBron having like huddles as if it were the Final Four, you know, in the key, the offensive part of the key. It was really cool. So it's always a spectacle, but it's more than just the All-Star game itself. But let's talk about the game for a second. This is the highest scoring game of all time. The team that scored 211 points, the East, was not expected to win. And I said to my daughter, not only will I cheer for the East always, every day, I'm an Eastern Conference guy. Obviously, the Toronto Raptors are in the East. I grew up watching Eastern Conference basketball, Bulls, Knicks, Pacers as well. Huge in the 90s, early 2000s, Reggie Miller, the Duncan Dutchman himself, Mark Jackson, lots of guys, Jalen Rose. But I'll always cheer for the East. So it was kind of cool to see East-West. And they were talking about the size of the West, especially the starting lineup. Huge. Of course, no Joel Embiid. So that makes a difference. Bam Adebayo started for the Eastern Conference. Get well soon, Embiid. He was going to be the league MVP if he kept going like it. We'll see when he gets back in the season. But the Eastern Conference started raining threes. And the West, like if you're going to get into a dunk contest, if you're going to get into a track meet, the West is going to have their way. But not only was the West bigger, they're older, right? Giannis, before the game, was talking about how he was the second oldest guy in his team. I think Giannis is 28 years old. It was Dame, then Giannis, of course, because Embiid wasn't there. Julius Randle wasn't there. I think they're 28 and 29 years old, respectively. So there's two of the older guys that could. But the West, they had KD, LeBron, Steph, just to name a few, on that team who are in their mid to late 30s, right? Then you had Kawhi, Paul George, who are also in their 30s. Those guys, I think, are 31 or 32 this year. So it was an older team. And you could see, like, LeBron in that first quarter, he threw down some jams and got on the break and wanted to still show that he could – that he could fly, that he had some lift. But LeBron looked a little slow. You could tell he was like trying to get it all out in that first half, first quarter even. But he had a big sleeve up his left leg. And so that was something to monitor because, you know, just he looked a little bit tighter, a little bit slower. And then he didn't play the second half, but the Eastern Conference for me, as they were hitting threes, the Eastern Conference just looked like they were just going to outscore the West because the West, if they were making threes, that was one thing, but they weren't. And then they were just making twos. So you had the Eastern Conference just making more buckets in general, but all their baskets, it seemed like, were three-point shots. So it was a really wild first half because I think a lot of teams thought a lot of fans and media people thought, oh, this is the Western Conference's game. They're not going to blow this. But then Tyrese Halliburton started hitting threes. In fact, in the first 2-3 minutes, Halliburton had hit 4 threes. 12 points in like two and a half minutes. I think from the first one going in to the fourth one going in, it was like a minute 30. I mean, that's a lot of points in a minute 30. Then Dame gets going from the logo. Jason Tatum punches in. Giannis puts his fingerprints on the game with dunks. And wouldn't you know, the Eastern Conference is up double digits for almost the entirety of the first half. Now, there was no defense. Jokic and Doncic made a bit of a joke, a bit of a mess of the game. Steph was a professional. So was KD and LeBron. That's what vets do. But the bench for the West and really, a number of the starters, Jokic, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Luka Doncic, they just didn't have it. They weren't worried about it. Shai Gilgeous, you know, like Steph, was a professional. KD. But they just didn't have the firepower. They didn't come out all guns blazing from downtown. And they found themselves in a hole. Now, LeBron James didn't play the second half. The guys are old. They're down. They know it's going to take effort to get back into the game. On the Eastern Conference bench, you got Scottie Barnes, Paolo Banchero, Jaylen Brown, who had a really nice game, Tyrese Maxey, who had shot the ball in the first half, Jalen Brunson chips in. He even had a dunk in the first half, probably his only dunk. They have Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, tons and tons of guys who can just rain threes. So if you're going to stop them, you got to come with defense and intensity. And for an all-star game, when you're already down, when you got guys who you got to defend at the perimeter, who are quick, young, who can blow by you if you try and defend, like, I think the West saw how well the East were shooting and saw the makeup of the team and were just like, nah, this ain't our night. The only guy from the West who really took it up a notch, and by this point the game was over, it was a 20-point game going into the fourth, and the East just did not slow down in terms of their output. But Karl Anthony Towns took it upon himself to make people know that he was in this game. He scored 50. He had a handful of threes. he all of a sudden the fourth quarter started making it look like he was going to be in the dunk contest next year. I don't think I've seen this much energy from Karl-Anthony Towns in general. It does remind you how talented and athletic these guys are, because when the intensity's up, Karl-Anthony Towns isn't, you know, throwing down reverse jams on the fast break. He knows he's got to conserve his energy. He knows how effective he can be down low in the half court, shooting threes, defending, trying to protect the basket with Rudy Gobert and company. But he just had fun with it. We're down 20. LeBron, Nikola Jokic, Luka, Katie, they're not coming into the fourth and showing any intensity. Steph had hung him up or just wasn't interested. Devin Booker, who's had some nagging injuries this year, he wasn't going to put too much into it. I think Anthony Edwards and Kawhi Leonard were like, listen, if we have five guys that aren't going to give their 100%, we're certainly not putting our – so they load manage the second half. And respect to them. Those guys have been playing fantastic. The league has wanted to cut back on load management. So if you're going to do it, why not do it in the NBA All-Star game, right? Like your performance, your effort and intensity in the All-Star game should not count against you in any way. No one should be like questioning your season if you're not putting the same intensity into the All-Star game as you did into games. I mean, the league has tried to make this a big point of emphasis. Play hard, go all out in the regular season. So I have nothing against what these guys did in this game. But the Eastern Conference, you gotta show respect, gotta shout out them. They came with it. They were sizzling, and they cruised to a record-breaking 211-point performance, winning by 25. I don't think it ever got to 30, but it was never under 15 in the second half. I would say for the majority of the second half, it was in the 20s. The fans wanted to see Tyrese Haliburton get the MVP. I think when the game still was like competitive, slightly competitive, when the game was still somewhat in question, there was still a chance the West could come back. I thought Damian Lillard was the guy who gave them the separation in the second quarter and then put the game away in the third with Jaylen Brown. So I thought Tyrese Haliburton, while really good, he was like 10 of 16 from downtown. I thought Tyrese Haliburton was second in the running. Dame just had more sustainable kind of game. He also missed like four or five in a row, Dame, in the fourth quarter and then hit his last three-point shot. But, you know, the fans wanted to finish the weekend strong. They had, you know, seen Benedict Mathurin and his team, Jalen Rose coached team in the Rising Stars game, win that little four-team tournament. And then Benedict was the Benedict Mathurin was the MVP for that. Then you saw Haliburton, Mathurin, and Miles Turner win the skills competition. They cruised through that. And then they got a really good three-point performance from half-court Halley. He was in the mix to get to the final, but was bumped out in a four-way tiebreaker in the three-point contest. And so, you know, they've got a guy in the All-Star game and they want to see him get it. And again, he shot the lights out, 10 of 16 from downtown at one point. I think it was 8 of 9. But Dame, I think Dame, rightly so, got the award, the East won. He had the most points. He was the difference maker in the second and third. So there you go. There you go. His first MVP, I believe. And as they said on the broadcast, the first time that anyone's won the MVP and won either the dunk contest or the three-point contest, the first time since 1988 when Michael Jordan did it, I believe in Chicago. So that's huge. When you're in that kind of category with just one other guy, and that other guy is Michael Jordan, and it happened 35, 36 years ago, that's just really impressive. So big respect, mad respect to Dame, mad respect to Tyrese for really putting on a show for the home crowd. But at the end of the day, this was about a lopsided Eastern Conference victory, and about the youthfulness of this team. Now, we had a dunk contest. I wish I could say that it was a good one. It really wasn't. Mac McClung was better last year than he was this year. There was some conversation about Mac McClung maybe coming back for a three-peat. Never happened in the dunk contest. There's been a couple of repeat performances, but never a three-peat. They talked about Damian Lillard in the three-point contest coming back for a three-peat. There's only been a few repeats, and the last guy to do it was in 07-08, Jason Capono, former Toronto Raptor, former Philadelphia 76er. I believe he played for the Knicks too, but he was not an all-star. He was not really that great of a player, but boy, he could shoot. He won back-to-backs. That's the first time in 16 years that's happened. So they were talking about him being a three-peat. But I got to give love. I'll tell you the guy who I really thought was awesome in the dunk contest. And not because of really any of the dunks he did. They're fine. He's super athletic. But the fact that he was an all-star, Jaylen Brown, for the cool in you, as Babyface would say, for the cool in you, I got to give you a big shout out. So many times we've begged as fans all-stars to show up in the dunk contest. They do for the three-point contest. Obviously, there's less effort involved. But, I mean, again, we had Dominique Wilkins was an all-star multiple years, and he was in the dunk contest multiple years when he was an all-star. Same with Michael Jordan. You've had other guys in the past who have done this. You know, when Vince won it in 2000, he wasn't in the All-Star game. He was in the All-Star game in 2001. You know, Kobe was in the dunk contest. He later became an All-Star. I think he was in the dunk contest his rookie year, and he wasn't an All-Star then. He was a rookie. He was an All-Star, I believe, in the second year in 1998 when he got the first opportunity to go against Michael Jordan, just an iconic moment. Different the next time they met in the All-Star game, I think it was 2002, could have been 2001, one of those years, let's say 02. And that was another iconic moment because you knew Jordan was, you know, kind of at the end, right? Like he had one or two more years and here they are again going at it like they did in 98, which I believe was a game in San Antonio. For the cool in you, Jaylen Brown, got to give mad respect for him being in the dunk contest. And guess what? Guess what happened? During the dunk contest, another guy we've been begging to be part of this, obviously the last two seasons, things didn't go as well as I think many in the league would have liked. But Ja Morant was tweeting during the All-Star weekend that he was considering probably because Jaylen Brown was there, probably because he knew he could make it a better event, earn some cash back after all the suspensions. But man, who wouldn't want to see Ja Morant in the dunk contest? And I think it's one thing to have Mac McClung there, kind of a Spud Webb type guy, like he's only 6'1", 6'2". And so to have him in the dunk contest and competing as a, at a high level as a dunker, that wouldn't be a bad thing to have him come back and showcase his athleticism. But, you know, to have Ja there, I think Zion Williamson was mentioned. You get somebody else who's a high flyer. Karl Anthony Towns was putting on a show. There was some call outs for him. I don't know how good he'd be in a dunk contest. Certainly a free throw line dunk could be in the mix for Karl Anthony Towns. But I don't think that's the guy people are looking for. You know, there's some Zion Williamson, call outs, hoping he might be interested. I think that would be something maybe 2 years ago he'd be interested in. I don't know if he still would be. There's other guys. There's the Canadian guy, Sharp, out of Portland, that I think people would love to see him in the dunk contest. There's other guys. But give us some guys that are known, you know, to be leapers, to be great even in-game dunkers. I mean, Anthony Edwards, I think he has been in a dunk contest. But I think that would get the fans going, which is part of the reason why the three-point contest has been something that I think people have really looked forward to way more than the dunk contest. I think the last good dunk contest was 2020, the second time that Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine were in the dunk contest, and the second time, of course, that Aaron Gordon was ripped off. If they had of had the judging the same this year as they did in 2020, or vice versa, I guess if it had been the same in 2020 as it was this year, then people could vote with 50 numbers instead of only having a chance to vote, you know, 1 through 10, giving rankings or ratings for the dunk 1 through 10. It's unfortunate that they didn't make that adjustment back in, 2017 after the first robbery of Aaron Gordon when Zach LaVine took it. I mean, Zach LaVine in 2016 was fantastic. He really could have won many dunk contests, but in that particular year, Aaron Gordon was just unreal. And I think it was the second dunk of the final, he had the better dunk. And then they went to an extra dunk. And I think in 2020 went to two extra dunks. And if you had have had the 1 through 50 option, I think you would have seen the judges give Zach LaVine, a 48 or 49. And then you would have seen Aaron Gordon have 50s across the board, because he had two jams in the finals in 2016 and two or three jams in the finals of the 2020 dunk contest, where he was just unbelievable, you know. It wasn't the best jams of all time, but it was right up there. It was right up there. So I think people want those level of players, but also, they want guys who are in the All-Star game to be dunking. When you have all the youthfulness that you did, you know, Donovan Mitchell was in the All-Star game. He's a former dunk contest winner. Obviously Jalen Brunson's not going to be in the dunk contest. There was always calls for Giannis, but I think Giannis he's past 26, 27. I think he gets a bye on being in another dunk contest. But yeah, you hope it's more exciting. It used to be the main event, and now the three-point contest is, partly because the guys are just so good now. You know, there isn't guys that they're just kind of filling spots. No, these guys are incredible. It's quite the lineup. And then you've got a real competition between all-stars. You know, Dame Lillard, Tyrese Halliburton. I think Tyrese Maxey was there. Jalen Brunson shot threes. And so you want that. That's the kind of competition. You've got the top 30 players at the All-Star game. give them a chance to shoot against each other. Now, if there's a guy who's shooting, you know, 45% or higher in the league during the regular season, okay, throw him into the mix. You know, if you wanted to put a Norm Powell type guy in there, I think there was a few guys that shot the three ball well this year that were part of the competition this year. I think Buddy Hield was last year. He wasn't an all-star, but they threw him in because he was just such a good shooter, right? Maybe Isaiah Joe next year gets thrown to the mix. But in general, like out of the eight guys, five or six of those guys should be all-stars, and they have been all-stars. They also did something else that was really special this year, and that was having Sabrina Ionescu going against Steph Curry as like a three-point showcase. It was to raise money for charity, but also I think to elevate how good the WNBA players are. I think Caitlin Clark, who now has the record for the most points in a career by a woman in the NCAA, she still has probably 10, 12 games to go to extend that lead. But, you know, she's going to be a WNBA player next year, likely playing for Indiana as the Fever are, I think finished worst last year or in that bottom group, and they won the lottery. I think they're in the bottom two or three teams last year. They have Aaliyah Boston, who's already there. They faced off against each other in the semifinals. So that would be a dynamic duel inside out. And she had a great rookie season, Aaliyah did. I think that they could extend the showcase and show how good these players are. Well, what does Sabrina Ionescu do? She gets 26 points in the showcase round. And she hadn't been warming up more than 5 minutes with Steph. And that was pretty darn impressive when you think that the three people who went to the finals, Dame Lillard, Trae Young, who is my pick to win it, and he had the ball in his hands to win it, and he didn't. Karl-Anthony Towns was also in the final, but their scores were 26. I think Dame had 26 in the final, maybe 27, but Sabrina Ionescu is like, you know, she can be a top 10 three-point shooter in a contest like that among all NBA players, among all players in general. To see her compete like that, to perform at that high level, is pretty impressive, to say the least. So hopefully they continue that. It was a lot of fun. Steph did win it. He had 29. Of course, we've seen Steph score into the 30s. I think Dame even was into the 30s, so they were talking about maybe instead of having Dame be in the three-point contest, he's part of the showcase with Steph and maybe Caitlin Clark next year. That would be a lot of fun. That would be a ton of fun. We are well past the halfway point in the season. Right now, most teams have played, you know, somewhere between 53 and 55 games. Even 56 for some teams. The Pacers have played 56 games at this point in the season. So the Bucks, but you know, between 53 and 56 games. So we are well past the halfway point, but you know, the All-Star break has happened. We are going to get basketball back on, I believe, on Wednesday. And as you look at the standings and you look at this kind of final stage of the season, final third of the season, it's almost that kind of stretch run, probably in 2 weeks when we get into March. That will be the stretch run, that final, you know, kind of 5 weeks of the season, the final 20 games. You know, this is the time where teams who have kind of taken a step back, like the Knicks did due to injuries, or have kind of played around with the first half or first two thirds like the Nuggets did. Teams who are trying to figure it out, who have made big changes, whether with players, trades, or whether it's through coaching changes like the Bucks. This is your big stretch here. You got to show up and you've got to make that push to get maybe home court advantage, to get into the top two teams in your conference, perhaps, or to make a run to get to the sixth seed so you don't have to be in the play-in. And we're starting to see that jockeying. We're starting to see teams take it a little more seriously. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. And I thought this was a good time to do the power rankings. I want to talk about the MVP rankings ladder, as I think JJ Redick calls them. I'm sure other people do too. But I want to get into the power team power rankings as well and start there first. Could do this in order or reverse order. I usually do it in reverse order, and so we'll go that way. But it has been fun. I got to give shout out. Here's the honorable mention. Talk about playoff pushes. Talk about play-in pushes. I think I have to give a shout out, honorable mention, in this power ranking to the Golden State Warriors. They could have given up. They could have traded a number of guys. There was talks of maybe even LeBron James being a target for their trades, giving up some young guys. They didn't go that way. And they turned it up. Kuminga has found a place in the starting lineup. That's made a difference. They're going to get Chris Paul back into the lineup. But this is a team with Steph, Clay, and Draymond where they, you know, this is now or never. This is the final push. This is the final opportunity in their careers to win a championship. This is the last dance, as Michael Jordan's documentary said. So shout out to the, and an honorable mention to the Warriors. They were 8-2 in their last 10. Steph had four games where he hit at least seven threes. Going into the All-Star break, he looked really, really good. Hopefully Clay in the ocean to get that body right for the final, you know, 26, 27 games of the season. They're in the 10 seed, are now four games up on the Utah Jazz, who I think they've put away. That is my guess, that they will be at minimum the 10 seed. The Lakers have the same amount of losses, so they are at least four games up on the Utah Jazz. I think the Lakers and Warriors have done enough to at least get into the play-in. And I would imagine they will make a push to catch. Both of them, I think, will make a push to try and catch the 8 seed. However, it is close. And at the bottom end of this power rankings, there is a lot of teams in that Western Conference that I could have talked about to get into the top 10. You've got, you know, the Kings, the Mavs, the Pelicans, they're all fighting for that 10 spot. I think the Eastern Conference with, of course, the door being open to a lot of movement because the floor fell out from underneath the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid's need to have meniscus surgery during the season. When will he come back? You know, probably sometime in March, maybe late March, and then they have to slowly bring him back. It's going to be interesting whether they can keep the sixth spot. And I think they'll want to do that because they don't want to just throw the season away. There's been talks that maybe Embiid shuts it down completely and doesn't come back because you don't want re-aggravation or just purely a re-injured knee. And so he's going to need that rest. It'll be really interesting to see how he heals. Again, not all people, not all bodies are treated equally, right? You've got a guy who's 7'3" and 280 pounds. You can't just have Joel Embiid just waltz back into the season. It's a lot harder for him, I think, for his body, for his knee to take on that much stress. Kind of like Zion Williamson coming back from multiple injuries. Very different than if, you know, Tyrese Maxey or Tyrese Halliburton in their early to mid-20s came back more nimble, more flexibility, less stress on the body, right? So who knows what's going to happen to Philadelphia. I think for me, the Sixers are out of this top 10 because of that. And I don't know if they'll even finish in the top six in the Eastern Conference. But a team I had to give respect to, and this is no shade at anybody else in the Western Conference who's in the playoff picture, the team I had to give respect to in this, you know, iteration, this edition of my power rankings is the Dallas Mavericks. Yes, they are seventh. The Pelicans are ahead of them by just a game. In the last 10 games, both of them have been 7-3. But the Dallas Mavericks have won six straight. Luka is definitely looking like an MVP candidate. He has 34.3 points a game, just second to Joel Embiid. You know, he's going to be in that MVP mix. And the Mavs needing to make that push. It's not going to be easy to catch the Pelicans or the Suns, who are also just a game up on them. Obviously, the Suns, even though they've been 7-3 in the last 10, I think they could replicate that two or three more times to finish the season and really look like a top seed in the West and a top 6-7 seed or top 6-7 type club, especially a seven-game series going into the playoffs. I'd put my money, if they can be consistent with their big three, of course, they're now all healthy in the last 10 games. If they can be consistent, I think they'll be ahead of the Thunder and Wolves in the West because of their inexperience and youthfulness and because the Suns' ability to score in any which way. In the half court, in transition, in fast breaks, fast-paced games, slow-paced games. Their defense has been in question, but I think the Suns will, if they can keep up their consistency and health, I think they are the 3 seed in the East. But the Mavs got to get love. They're my 10 seed in this power ranking because of where they are. The Suns are my 9. Still haven't fully shown that they can compete with the top 4 or 5 teams in the league right now, but they're going to slowly get to that point, I think, but they're not there just yet. The team who's just above them in these rankings, this power rankings, is the Milwaukee Bucks. And you might say, listen, the last 2 games, they've lost both. They're 3-7 in their last 10, but they have gone through a big change. They have collapsed a bit, but they're still kind of hanging on and they're, I think their future looks brighter than it did 15 games ago when everyone was just unhappy. And I think with Doc Rivers being part of this team and was there yesterday as the head coach of the All-Star team, although he'll be giving his winnings from yesterday as the head coach of the team, he'll be giving his earnings to Adrian Griffin, who did lead his team to a 30-13 record. They are 5-8 under the leadership of Doc Rivers. There, you can see that there's some adjustments being made, but it's going to take them time, and they don't have a lot of it. So kind of like Phoenix, the time is now for them, but I have them as the 8th seed, even though they have the third best record in the Eastern Conference. They do have the 8th best record overall. And so that's where I'm putting them. The New York Knicks, they've lost 4 straight, but before that were 10-1, only losing to LeBron and AD at Madison Square Garden. Of course, LeBron wanted to bring it. This might be his last or maybe second last game at MSG. It's tough to know for sure. But the Knicks in general have played quite well. They're right on the heels of the Bucks. And if they hadn't have had Julius Randle injured, OG Anunoby injured, and Brunson resting a couple of those 4 games that they lost, this is a Knicks team that probably would be tied with the Bucks record-wise. So the Knicks, for me, are the 7 seed in this rankings. Now it gets interesting because there is a lot of jockeying. And I think right now there has been a little more of a relaxed approach. There has been some load management, some strategic sitting being done. But the Denver Nuggets are my sixth seed. They are the four seed in the West. Their record is right there with a few teams in the East as well. But for me right now, the Nuggets just sitting back and ready to make a real run. Ready to, like, kind of a Vin Diesel. They're the Vin Diesel of the NBA. Just kind of sitting back and, you know, away from the league leaders and ready to hit that NOS at just the right time. My guess is that they finish first or second in the Western Conference when it's all said and done. I believe they have played 56 games. They played 55 games. So they have 27 games to go. My guess is they're going to win at least 20 to finish the season, which would put them on 56 wins. I think that will be better than the Thunder. And I honestly think that the Timberwolves will have their hands full with all these teams in the Western Conference, 10 of them being very much in the mix to make the playoffs. I think, you know, the Suns, Pelicans, Mavs, Kings, Lakers, Warriors are all going to be fighting for the sixth spot in the last couple weeks of the season. And I think that Wolves team are just going to face so many challenges. And, you know, they will be really having to raise their game to make sure that they can close games. So I think the Nuggets, who are back three of the Wolves, can catch them. But right now, they are the sixth seed in the power rankings because in the last 10, they've been 5-5. And like I said, load managing some of their starters, especially Jokic and Murray, they lost their last three games. So that's where I put them in this power rankings. The number five team, and to some extent, I wish I could put them higher. They are soaring in the power rankings, soaring in the league standings. They are in the Eastern Conference. They have the second best record. They're 9-1 in their last 10. There's something ridiculous, like 17-3 in their last 20. They're playing incredible on the road, which the Bucks have not. The Bucks actually have a better home court record than the Cavs. But the Cavs are 17-8 on the road. They have got fully healthy. They are going to be a lot of fun. I don't know if they can hold off the Bucks in the final stretch of this season, but I think it'll be close. And if they get that two seed and are able to host the Bucks in a seven-game series, even host a team like the Pacers in a seven-game series, I think home court advantage against the Heat is going to be really, really important. You need to come out strong, win those first two games. Even if you lose both after that, you know, that having that home court is going to be really important. So I think they're going to go for it. But they are healthy. They are flying high. And they are my five seed. And like I said, could easily have been higher. Unfortunately for them in this power rankings, the team who is just above them in the four spot, who are 7-3 in their last 10, they are just a game back, a game and a half back of the Timberwolves, is the Thunder. They are 37-17, second best record by half game over the Clippers. Sorry, they are 6-4 in their last 10. They have won two. I think partly why the Thunder are my four seed is because their record in the last 10. Maybe that's unfair to them. But they're playing pretty darn good basketball, third best home record. And they've got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who has been magnificent this season. Even yesterday, there were a couple times where you could just see this guy is at such a high level. He was a starter. How about a Canadian being in the starting lineup of an NBA All-Star game? It's just amazing. He's coming off, you know, winning the number one athlete in Canada this year, as he should. He's just been at such a high level, and he's getting all the accolades and all the praise, and his team are playing well, and they're just right at the top, right near the top of his power rankings and the league standings. But they're just a little bit high behind the Clippers, because the Clippers just look solid, rock solid. They came on like gangbusters, similarly to how the Cavs are playing in December and January. Now they're trying to tweak a few last things before the stretch run in March. That last kind of month, full month of the season, coming out of this All-Star break. But look for them to make some final tweaks. Look for them to gel that much more. And I think them and the Nuggets will probably finish 1-2 in the Western Conference, if I had to guess. I think it's going to be important to not go on the road to start a series against the Nuggets. And if they want to get to the finals, I think they're going to have to go through the Nuggets. If they're, you know, a three seed and they're playing a team like the Suns or like the Mavs, they're going to want to have home court advantage. But I think if they get into that second round, they're playing OKC or the Wolves, I think they're going to want home court advantage. Those teams are going to be hungry. And if they get to the second round, they're going to be that much more confident. So I'm looking for the Clippers to go on a real run with the Nuggets and take over the Western Conference. But for now, they're the three seed. Why? Because the best team in the Western Conference in the last 10 games, the team who has the best record in the Western Conference overall and should get my respect, they're 7-3 in the last 10, which is tied for the best record of among the teams who are right now in the top 8 in the Western Conference. They've won 4 straight. They have the best conference record. They have the best home court record in the Western Conference, the Minnesota Timberwolves. And with 2 All-Stars in Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, with the coach, the guy who got to represent the Western Conference, the coach of the Western Conference team, Chris Finch, former Toronto Raptor. I think he was a Toronto Raptor coach, assistant coach to Nick Nurse for about 3 months. But we'll claim him. We'll claim him in this moment. He has led his team to the best record, and they deserve to be in the power rankings at number 2. At number 1, a team who pretty much has held this down from start to finish. I think I've given some love to OKC at one point because they did beat this team maybe, 5-6 weeks ago. But the best team in the league, they are 8-2 in their last 10, just second to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've won 6 straight, though, which is tied with the Dallas Mavericks for the current best winning streak or longest winning streak. They have the best home court record in the league, 26-3, where they've dominated at home. And their record is best in the league by 4 games over the Timberwolves. It is the Boston Celtics on pace to win 60-plus games with a record of 43-12. I would imagine that in the next 20 games, they will be poised to win at least 15, if not more. And then after those 20 games, they will do what the Nuggets have been doing up until this point, kind of just putting it on cruise control. Maybe they go 3-4, 4-3, get that break for their starting lineup because they'll need it. But, get that home court advantage throughout the entirety of the playoffs. And if you do that, I think that puts them in a good spot if they were to get the Clippers, if they were to get the Nuggets, especially the Nuggets, who have that great home court advantage, not just with their fans, obviously they have that, but a home court advantage with the altitude. So the Celtics do not want to go into Denver 4 times if it's a 7-game series. They do not. So deal with that early, get out with a 2-0 lead. And then if you can steal one in Denver, you might close it in Boston, or, you're in Denver for a game 6 with a 3-2 lead. You're playing with house money. You're playing, free and fast, loose, because it's coming back to Boston if you lose that game. And so it makes things a little, not manageable. It just brings you that extra lift, that extra freedom. Certainly you don't want to have to go to a game seven, but if you do, it's on your home court. I know they lost to Miami last year in a game seven. They lost in game six to the Warriors, but I think at that point the Warriors had figured out Boston pretty well. Game four of that series was more when they lost that series in 2022. So they want home court advantage. They don't want to mess around with that. And they want it throughout the entirety of the playoffs, including the finals. So get stuff done now, get it out of the way, and then you can coast and at the top. I would imagine they'll win at least 60 games. I'm going to say 62 games, which is 19 games to finish the season. They have 27 games left. That would put them at 19-8, and I think they'll go 3-4 to finish the year. So they are going to be pretty tough in the next 20 games to close out the final third of the season. And they are at the top. They are at the summit of this this league and this power rankings. I was going to get into some MVP talks. I've talked about that before. I won't have a ton of time on this podcast. I'm realizing we're close to the hour mark, and I've been going a little longer because there's just lots to talk about. And I've only been doing this once a week, so people can, I think, listen in two chunks if they want to. Certainly, you know, in this pod, you could listen to the All-Star Game stuff, and then you could listen to the league musings. I'll probably get into some Raptors conversation in the next podcast, although there's not a lot to talk about, and I'm certainly not watching the games. I'm just, you know, just be a commentary from a distance, which I will do next week. Actually, I'll be recording two episodes. It'll be on the road. I'm going to Toronto to hang out with my boy Chad Cecil. I'm also going to the Burna Boy concert. If any of you guys are going to the Burna Boy concert, let me know. Should be a ton of fun. A real good show. There's two shows, Saturday and Sunday, Burna Boy's in Toronto. And then he goes to Montreal for 2 days. And he's just in Chicago this Wednesday. I think he's in New York after Montreal. But looking forward to that. But I'll record on the way there in the car. I'll record going to Toronto and then coming back from Toronto. So, yeah, probably won't be an hour long for those ones as this one has almost got to the hour length. So I'll just briefly do an MVP conversation. I got 10 guys, and I would say – the first three are kind of honorable mentions. I don't think that any of these three, unless something significant happens by them as individuals or by their team or both down the stretch. But I got to say these three guys are kind of honorable mentions, but they are in the top 10. My first guy is Anthony Edwards. He has been the best team. Best player on the best team in the Western Conference. He's been excellent. He was an all-star, as he should have been. Ant is playing at a high level. Offense, defense, you know, first three quarters, clutch time. He's been excellent. He's been the best player on that team, despite Karl Anthony's performance of, you know, putting up a 50-piece yesterday at the All-Star game. The best player on the Minnesota Timberwolves has been Anthony Edwards, and he deserves to be on the MVP list. At number nine, who's had a really good season, who is, I think, held his team together, is shooting 44% from downtown, a career high right now. If he were to hold that shooting clip, his defense has been good as well. But his overall game, his patience, his leadership are giving his team some consistency, some stability. And I think this would be a fun team to pick, actually, to win it all. But Kevin Durant, the Phoenix Suns, Kevin Durant is my number nine. He's been great. Easy money sniper. He's just such a difficult guy to cover. And he can do it in all facets of the half court. He can hit you from downtown. He can hit you in the post. He can hit you in the dunker spot. He can hit you from the mid-range. And that's so important, and something that's so important about the Phoenix Suns that are going to make them so dangerous. If they can get be healthy, stay healthy, get consistency. All three of those guys can score and play make at all three levels, and especially in the mid-range. And if you can win the mid-range, and then you've got kickouts to guys like Eric Gordon or one of the other two big three in Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, give me a break. You are going to score 130-plus points and put teams away early. So, but Kevin Durant has been great for Phoenix, and I think he's the number nine guy in the MVP ladder. The other guy, he's been a little injured. He looked good in the All-Star game, though, luckily. He's back looking like he's 100%. Jalen Brunson. And believe me, I would love to put him higher, but there's just so many good players in the league and so many guys who have been having career years that I can't put Brunson higher. He gets to the All-Star game for the first time this year. I thought for some reason, maybe because I just think of last season from the playoff perspective, but I thought Jalen Brunson made the All-Star team last year. I don't know why I couldn't remember that, but Jalen Brunson has been spectacular. He has carried the team or led the team for most of the season. I know guys have been injured around him, but when they're healthy, he leads that team, and he's done a really good job of it. His numbers are great. Jalen Brunson, he's one of the clutch performers. He continued where he left off from last year's playoff. He is my number eight guy on this list. Now, some people are not going to like this pick, but I think this guy is where he should be because his team's a little bit behind. You know, maybe you could put him in the top five, but I've got him at seven. We'll see. He could go up if his team continued to play well. They've won six in a row. Luka Doncic, who's second by far. There is a gap between second and third. He's second in the league in scoring per game, next to Joel Embiid. His playmaking is just starting to come in its own. Him and Kyrie, healthy, finding momentum. We know that they are going to be really difficult down the stretch of games if it's close. Can they keep it close? What's their defense going to be like? They did add PJ Washington. Unfortunately, a casualty to that trade was Grant Williams. I think Grant Williams is going to be a really important guy as his career goes on, but it's not going to be in this situation because nobody wants to hear from him. Certainly Kyrie and Luka are not the superstars that would do well with Grant Williams. I think a guy like Giannis might, maybe. I think a guy like LeBron would just put him in his place, tell him to shut up and get in line. but I think that Luka Doncic right now is number seven. Not by much. It's close. He's very close to this next guy, Nikola Jokic. And the reason why Jokic is higher than him, not number one, because his team has played much better and they haven't even, you know, put it into fourth gear yet. They're just sitting in third, cruising like they're, you know, going down the beach beside Santa Monica, you know, Boulevard type thing, just third gear, maybe even second gear, to be honest. But Jokic is my number six ahead of Luka, and honestly could easily be higher, but I think because he's averaging 12 rebounds a game, 9 assists to go along with, you know, his 26.3, I think, points per game. When you're averaging 12 rebounds, like, that is impressive. 26.1 points a game. His three-point shooting has been a little down. His free throw shooting has been a little down. But for me, the key stat is that 12 rebounds. That means you're putting in effort. You're doing the job on both ends of the floor. And I give respect to Jokic for that. And I put him just a little bit above Luka Doncic. So you can argue with me. Let me know what you think about that. But he's my six. Giannis is my number five. His numbers are pretty spectacular again. Still behind the best in the league. His team has struggled. But I think Giannis has just put more effort out there. He's they had a good run. I think he needed to have a good run to get him to 30-13 under Adrian Griffin. He's going to need to have a really good finish if he's going to want to have any chance to be in the top three in the East. But I think he's also going to need, if he's going to be in the top three in the MVP conversation as well. I got Embiid just ahead of him. I had to put Embiid ahead of him because he just was playing so good up until 2 weeks ago, where he had to shut it down due to this meniscus issue in his knee. But Embiid was the guy. He was unanimous on February 4th. It was unanimous that he was the MVP. So I'm putting him a little higher because I think he deserves it. But it's quite possible Embiid's not going to be in this conversation because he just won't have played 65 games. And, you know, his impact when he comes back is really questionable, right? Number three, Donovan Mitchell. He's led this team when Evan Mobley and Darius Garland were out. He's an all-star. He could have easily been a starter with Tyrese Halliburton or Dame. His numbers are fantastic. He's doing so much for this team, but he is the leader of this team, and they are the hottest team in the league right now in the last 10 and the last 20. They're second in the Eastern Conference. They just look really good. J.J. Bickerstaff has done a great job, but he needs someone to implement the strategies and plays on the floor, and Donovan Mitchell has been that guy. And for me, Donovan Mitchell is number three right now in this MVP ladder. Number two, his team's playing ridiculous. He is matured. He is a veteran, not just because he, you know, wasn't the five youngest guys on his team in yesterday's game, but because he's just really has refined his game. He's got, I would say, a better overall game. It's not just offense. It's not just shooting. His passing, his defense have been really sharp. And I think his leadership has also been important. And for me, that's important as an MVP. Jason Tatum, if the starters weren't so loaded, they could have had four or five All-Stars, to be honest. But if the starters weren't so loaded, I would put Tatum at number one. Because his team isn't the best in the league, and they've been the best by a long shot from start to finish. But Tatum is number two for me right now. Number one, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He is carrying his team. They have played unbelievable, well above people's expectations. I don't think he'll stay there at season's end, but if they do stay in the top three in the Western Conference and they finish this up really well, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to make a lot of people nervous about another international player, the fourth player, the fourth different country represented that's not the United States of America. But Shai Gilgeous, for me, is still holding that number one seed with Embiid out because he just by far is the best player on that team, and they're so young. And he's the guy, you know, unlike Tatum. Unlike in some respects, Mitchell, Shai Gilgeous is the guy, and he's the guy by like a huge margin, and he's just had such a career year. I got to give it to him. So that is my MVP ladder. Thank you for listening to this quite long recording. Hope you enjoyed the All-Star Weekend. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, peace in the Middle East, free Palestine, free Palestinians. May there be peace in Israel as well. Peace. I think I don't do dream or money or culture. I'm lost.